Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth and productivity of Florida depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust encourages all businesses to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital staff members. More information is at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
This year's presidential contest features two of the most divisive candidates in recent memory, and whoever becomes the next commander-in-chief will have to represent a divided electorate that struggles to see the other side.
It's not that I wouldn't be a friend with liberal, I just don't know that many around here that are, honestly.
Also this week, on Election Day, thousands of people will be watching others vote. So what does it take to be a poll watcher in Florida?
They cannot be a candidate, they cannot be a poll worker, and they cannot be a member of law enforcement.
We'll also preview a proposed constitutional amendment that could go before voters in 2018, giving them the final say on whether or not more gambling should be legal in Florida. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. One of the most divisive presidential contests is rapidly turning into one of the closest. Recent polls showing the race between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump within the margin of error. Kate Payne talks with starkly divided voters in a red county and a blue county about what happens if their candidate loses.
I'm standing on the corner of Jefferson and Madison Streets in downtown Quincy, Florida. It's a predominantly black small town in Gadsden County, and this is Hillary Clinton country. During the March 15th primary, every single precinct voted for Clinton. Sheila Campbell and Charlie Mae Kelly are waving campaign signs on the side of the road as traffic drives by. They're both strong Clinton supporters, and they're not ready to consider what a Trump administration might be like. Here's Charlie Mae Kelly.
In my heart, and the way I've been praying, I really don't think he's going to win. But God, you know, because God comes for all things. Yes, he do. And I don't believe he'll put him in there the way he's been acting. That man been talking about us like dirt. And the one voting for him, I don't see how they doing it. I really don't. I really don't.
And Sheila Campbell agrees. She says she doesn't know a single Trump supporter. Just up the street, I run into Bobby Monroe walking out of the Clinton campaign headquarters with a handful of yard signs. Her family is split this election season, and if Trump loses, she's planning to reach out to her Trump-leaning friends and family.
But the first thing, I've already been thinking about a Facebook post in which I asked Trump supporters, which included friends and family, what five things would they want to see done?
And if Trump wins?
The man doesn't really understand how it works up there. He keeps talking as if he is a despot and can just go up there and rule like a king. It doesn't work that way, and so I think he really won't get almost anything done.
Throughout this election, Monroe has been debating back and forth with her Trump-supporting sisters. So I ask her what Thanksgiving will be like after the election is resolved.
So what do I want? I want to have an ongoing conversation. And in that vein, I will try to treat them with respect and an open heart so that we can go on and have that open conversation, but not around the Thanksgiving table. No, thank you.
Forty miles away, I stop in downtown Crawfordville in McCulloch County. It's a little more split politically. There are plenty of blue dog Democrats, and 7 out of 12 precincts went for Trump in the primary. I run into three friends at the park on their lunch hour. Chris Kelly, Becky Stewart, and Renee Stevens. They're all bankers, Christians, and reluctant Trump supporters. Here's Chris.
If everybody is looking for a president to bring this country back on its feet, they're looking wrong. They need to be looking to God.
That's right.
Is what they need to be looking toward. Because not one man can turn around what all these men over the years have destroyed.
And they say no policy proposal or peace offering from Hillary Clinton could regain their trust. Here's Becky, then Chris, and Renee.
I don't know that there's anything that she could do.
I don't think there's anything because her core values do not align. And if she changed her core values, that would pretty much negate her whole stance, her whole platform.
would just survive the next 4 years like we have the last eight.
Becky says the thought of a Hillary Clinton presidency really worries her.
Devastated, very much so, because I can see our country falling apart. I really can.
And like the voters in Quincy, they say they don't know anyone on the other side. Here's Renee.
This is not that I wouldn't be a friend with liberal. I just don't know that many around here that are, honestly.
Once upon a time, there were more conservative Democrats than liberal Republicans. But today, those partisan labels are about so much more than politics. Increasingly, conservatives and liberals work different jobs in different neighborhoods in different parts of the country. And that makes it harder and harder to understand the other side, says Renee.
I think before you would have a lot more friends that were one or the other party. And now it's almost hard to be with people who believe completely different opposite. And I wish it weren't like that, but that's just life.
The next president will have to find a way to represent all of these divided voters. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
As candidates make their presence felt in Florida in the last days of the race, pundits continue to remind us this year's campaign is not just unusual, but unprecedented. So how does it feel to be casting your first ballot in 2016? From member station WLRN in Miami, Rowan Moore Garrity talks about the election with Florida high school seniors.
When she turned 18, Summer El Nono couldn't wait to register to vote.
Because I finally had a chance to voice my opinion somewhere. I was just, so happy.
When it came to who to vote for, things quickly got less exciting.
This whole election, I've been thinking, when will the real candidates come in? It would be amazing to have a woman president, but I don't just want to vote for her because she's a woman. So, and I definitely don't think I want to vote for Donald Trump. It's like building a wall.
El Nono isn't sure what she might do about the 20-odd other questions on her ballot in North Miami Beach.
I'm going to be honest, I'll probably get there and just vote randomly because I don't know all of these people. So I might just get in there and just vote for local Senate. I'll just click one box.
El Nono says that's better than not voting at all, though she did reconsider when she thought about the possibility of randomly supporting a candidate she strongly disagrees with. Even at the top of the ticket, El Nono says she and her friends have been discouraged by the attacks and half-truths in the presidential debates. She's hungry for more concrete information.
I would probably go to Google Scholars so it can scan out all the, the pathetic stuff that they write on Google so I can have a more defined search.
At Largo High School, outside Tampa, 12th grader Mackenzie Howard says she relies mostly on conversations with her dad.
I also see people's point of views on the internet, which is not the safest place to get point of views, but it that's how it works. So.
Both these 18-year-olds agree on their top issue this election.
Since I am going into college, my family financially struggles.
The college system, how much it is, and the debt that the students are acquiring, I think someone really needs to come along and help us.
Hunter Lane is a homeschooler who shared his top issues at a Donald Trump rally in Tampa.
This immigration and abortion are two of the main issues I see that has America in trouble right now. And I just feel like those should be resolved, and I think he has the answers.
Even a small sampling of students shows why Florida is often considered the swingiest of swing states. On the whole, though, Florida high schoolers, like young people nationwide, lean away from Donald Trump. A mock election staged in social studies classes nationwide had student voters in Florida backing Hillary Clinton 59-32%. Makeda Brown's questions about Trump begin with his slogan.
I feel like he reminds me of an Anglo-Saxon rich white man back in the 20s and 30s, you know? Oh, women, they don't need this or they don't need that. It's okay. Men run it. That's how I feel like if he becomes president, that's what he wants America to be. That's his Make America Great Again.
Brown is a senior at Young Women's Preparatory Academy in Little Havana. She moved to Miami with her mother from St. Kitts and Nevis when she was three. Now she's hoping to study engineering at FSU. She says she's proud to call herself an immigrant.
When he speaks about it, I get angry. In our eyes, he's a walking contradiction. Isn't your wife an immigrant?
Whoever wins on election night, Brown says she's bracing for fallout that goes beyond politics.
I think it will have a big effect on my friendship because I can just already see some of my friends, like, ignorance prevail. And that already made, like, you know, some strong friendships, like, you know, kind of deteriorate.
When she votes in the next election, she says she'll be looking for that rare political animal, the candidate who can bring people together. I'm Rowan Moore Garrity in Miami.
When voters head to the polls Tuesday, they'll check in, get their ballots, and proceed to vote. And watching the whole time will be monitors called poll watchers. They usually sit silently by on the lookout for any problems. And this election cycle, they've gotten more attention than ever before. But as poll watchers watch the polls, who's watching the watchers? Lynn Hatter has that story.
When voters head to the polls Tuesday, they'll check in, get their ballots, and proceed to vote. And watching the whole time will be monitors called poll watchers. They usually sit silently by on the lookout for any problems. And this election cycle, they've gotten more attention than ever before. But as poll watchers watch the polls, who is watching the watchers? I'm Lynn Hatter. It's still early voting on this day in Florida's state capitol, and the county courthouse is lined with campaign signs and sign waivers, all stationed just beyond the 100-foot barrier. Even the candidates are out.
I'm going to go Sunday. I'm going to do souls to the polls at 1 o'clock and come up and vote.
Jim Messer is a Republican candidate for state representative, and he's carrying a huge double-signed pole as he walks the streets. Nearby, a woman hands out flyers with little bubbles next to the Democratic candidates, and a man with another sign greets people as they pass by.
Good afternoon, ma'am.
Hi.
A steady line of people file in and out of the courthouse, and it's here where Donna Elric is stationed. She's sitting just off to the side of the action on the lookout.
I'm for the Democrats, for the Hillary Clinton campaign. I'm a poll watcher.
Ehrlich is an attorney, and she first signed up during the 2008 presidential election cycle for the Obama campaign. She says she wanted to do her part to make sure the election went smoothly, and she's been doing it ever since.
I am not allowed to speak to any voter. I'm just observing inside the building. I have the right to be in the building and to observe.
Ehrlich is on the lookout for voter suppression or intimidation, ballot mistakes, long lines, electronic breakdowns, that sort of thing. In Florida, poll watchers can be affiliated with candidates or political parties. The requirements are fairly simple.
The only couple of qualifications is that the voter has to be registered inside the county where they're submitted. They cannot be a candidate, they cannot be a poll worker, and they cannot be a member of law enforcement. Those are the only things that they must meet as far as whether they're qualified or not.
Chris Moore is Leon County's Assistant Supervisor of Elections. Less than a handful of the 200-plus poll watcher applications submitted to the county were rejected this year. Three Florida counties made Politico's list of key swing districts: Duval, Palm Beach, and Hillsboro. Duval has more than 480 registered poll watchers. Volusia has more than 500. In both those counties, Republicans make up about a third of the watchers. Meanwhile, in Palm Beach County, more than 1,100 people have signed up to watch the polls. 60% of them are affiliated with Republican campaigns. And it comes as Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump has encouraged his supporters to watch the polls. Here he is at a campaign rally in Pennsylvania.
And you've got to get everybody you know, and you got to watch your polling booths, because I hear too many stories about Pennsylvania, certain areas.
But Trump's call for poll watchers for his campaign specifically has netted less than 200 people in Florida's three main swing districts. The Clinton campaign, by contrast, has three times that many in the same places. Leon's Assistant Supervisor of Elections, Chris Moore, says overall interest in poll watching is the highest he's ever seen.
I will say we've had more poll watchers than I can remember, especially during the Election Day poll watching list. We have upwards of 75 for one campaign, 10 for another, 12 for another. In the primary general of 14, I don't remember many poll watchers then, but.
And that trend goes statewide. Come November 8th, more eyeballs than ever will be focused on Florida's polls. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Still to come on Capitol Report, while some say it's time to limit gambling in Florida, others worry a proposed amendment giving voters the final say could go too far.
A claw machine, which you will see at Red Elephant or any local restaurant around here, is a slot machine under state and federal law.
Abortion rights advocates are taking aim at a 24-hour waiting period law, arguing it interferes with women's private health care decisions.
This interference isn't incidental to the law. It is the point of the law.
And a Florida organization is trying to give parents more tools to help prevent child abuse and neglect.
Child abuse and neglect. It's not exactly the topic that comes up at parties. We don't typically like to just talk about it with our friends, but the truth is it's a reality.
Should voters get to decide whether casino gambling is allowed in Florida? The state Supreme Court is reviewing a proposed ballot measure that would require voter approval for changes to the state's elections rules. Regan McCarthy has more.
Gambling in Florida has long been a divisive issue. Last legislative session, lawmakers declared the time had come to put the issue to bed once and for all. Naples Republican Senator Garrett Richter says the legislature had spent enough time on talks.
We've already deferred this once. As you might know that I chaired a committee a few years ago, and we went around the state, and we had hearings, and we met in four corners of the state, and we had all kinds of public hearings right here in this room, and we debated these issues, we debated a commission, we debated the slots, we debated it all, and at the end of the day, it was decided to kick the can down the road to a future legislature, and this is the future legislature.
But lawmakers couldn't see eye to eye on a solution. While Governor Rick Scott pushed a gaming agreement with the Seminole Indian tribe that some saw as a major expansion, others pushed a constitutional amendment they hoped would put a lid on the issue by requiring voter approval for any gambling changes. Efforts to push the compact through failed, as did the proposed amendment. But the amendment has returned, this time as a citizens' initiative, and it's aiming to get on the ballot in 2018. It has received enough signatures of support to trigger this hearing before the Florida Supreme Court.
By providing Florida's voters with the exclusive right to authorize casino gambling in Florida, this amendment provides both clarity and common sense on an issue where both are sorely needed.
That's Adam Schachter, the lawyer representing supporters of the Voter Control of Gambling Amendment. He says the amendment provides clear direction and a definition of gambling. But Mark Dunbar, a lawyer representing several gambling interests in the state, says the ballot summary and amendment are anything but clear. And he says there's not enough information for voters to understand what the proposal would do. He cautions the amendment provides a broad definition for gambling and could have far-reaching consequences.
A claw machine, which you will see at Red Elephant or any local restaurant around here, is a slot machine under state and federal law.
But Schachter argues questions about the amendment's definition or potential impact don't fall under the current decision before the court.
It is undisputed that it is not for this court at this point in time to weigh in on the wisdom of the amendment, the merits of the amendment, or apply the language of the amendment to particular facts or circumstances. The issue before this court, the issue here is whether the ballot title and summary are misleading.
There's no timeline for when the court must rule. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
The Florida Supreme Court is preparing to rule on whether to allow a new abortion restriction to take effect. Nick Evans reports the measure requires women to wait 24 hours after an initial consultation before receiving treatment.
Since the Florida legislature approved a 24-hour cooling-off period in 2015, the measure has been in limbo, as different courts have stepped in with injunctions to keep the law on hold. Now the Florida Supreme Court is considering how to proceed. Denise Harley, arguing on behalf of the Attorney General, says the state is justified in delaying abortions just as it delays other major decisions like marriage.
The waiting period is not because it's a medical procedure. It's a waiting period because this is an irreversible, life-altering decision on the order of things like marriage, divorce, giving up your child for adoption, and other contexts where the state imposes a very brief waiting period for major life decisions because there is a societal interest in people entering into those decisions with due deliberation.
Making that point, that there is a compelling state interest in imposing the restriction, is important because Florida has heightened privacy requirements enshrined in its constitution. But as Harley continued to push the argument, some justices weren't having it.
The state is not trying to encourage or discourage abortions, just as the state is not attempting to discourage marriage anything else.
I appreciate you have to argue this for the state, but in all due respect, if you read and the affidavit of Dr. Curry, you really can't reach that conclusion, and it would have helped.
That's Justice Barbara Perriente cutting Harley off. American Civil Liberties Union attorney Julia Kay argues, without the law, women who are uncertain can wait as long as they need.
But when the only women who are impacted are the women who are ready to proceed, clearly the state is sending a message that it wants women to reconsider their decisions, that it disapproves of their decision, that it doesn't think women are capable of making this decision without a government-mandated delay.
And Kay argues if the state wants to step between women and abortion treatment, it has to contend with the state's constitutional privacy protections.
No court has held that a 24-hour mandatory delay law is so insignificant that it doesn't even implicate the right to privacy. To the contrary, courts applying the same standard that this court applies have struck down mandatory delay laws of as little as 2 hours because the state is delaying the woman who, after appropriate counseling, is prepared to give her informed consent and exercise this fundamental right.
But while both sides spar about the law's implications, the question before the court is actually far narrower.
The TI order should be affirmed, and this court should clarify that this overt and direct interference with the private decision to have an abortion must be subject to strict scrutiny.
The TI is the temporary injunction keeping the law from taking effect. Should the ACLU prevail, the law won't be declared unconstitutional. Instead, it'll go back to square one for a full evidentiary hearing, with the state having to prove its restriction is both compelling and narrowly tailored. It could mean years of litigation for a law that's already spent a year and a half in court. And as that trench warfare plays out, the U.S. Supreme Court's decision last June striking down a Texas law is putting further pressure on state governments to justify new restrictions. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Well, just in case you need a good excuse to head for the woods, deer hunting season begins tomorrow across a wide range of Florida, ranging from the Big Bend in the north to Lake Okeechobee in the south. Florida's Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission says deer hunting is the most popular form of hunting in Florida. Generally, hunters are allowed to harvest 2 antlered deer per day, up to a total of 4. Commission spokespeople say deer hunting is a key component to wildlife conservation, as well as a good activity for families to take part in together. Hunt fans also note deer meat is a good form of locally sourced protein that is leaner and fresher than many other forms of red meat. Anyone wanting to hunt deer this weekend needs a valid Florida hunting license along with a deer permit. The season runs through January 22nd of 2017. You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, last year there were nearly 200,000 child abuse, neglect, or abandonment investigations in Florida. As Sasha Cordner reports, one organization aims to help parents and others involved with children not only identify potential risk factors, but also to give them the tools to avoid such behaviors.
Rebecca Sheets is with Healthy Families Florida, a home visiting parent support program with the ultimate goal of preventing child abuse and neglect.
The truth is, it's a reality, and it's a daily occurrence here in Florida. And the truth of the matter is, the child welfare system alone can't prevent child abuse and neglect by themselves. So they have to call on every Floridian
to do their part to prevent child abuse and neglect before it happens.
But she says preventing child abuse and neglect before it occurs doesn't always happen. So she adds it's important that people know if they see something, they need to report it, especially since it's the law.
It's a common misconception that only those that work with children are mandated reporters, while in fact, the state calls on everyone to make sure that children are safe and well cared for.
Sheed says at Healthy Families Florida, they try to promote positive parent-child interactions, and they measure whether what they're doing is working.
And we are 98% effective. 98% of families who participate in our program are free from abuse or neglect during participation. And if that wasn't awesome enough, 12 months after completing our program, we monitor it again. And 98% of families who complete our program are free of child abuse and neglect 12 months after completion of the program.
And Sheed says there are multiple statistics that show prevention efforts have lifelong benefits for the child. Nancy Peck, a senior trainer with Healthy Families Florida, agrees. She says first, parents need to be educated so they can make informed decisions about what's best for their families, and that includes learning about the red flags that can lead to child abuse and neglect.
The first red flag is multiple children in the home under the age of 5. It can really create some havoc, right? And so we're not saying that this is a bad thing, but we are saying that we can give parents some really good, valuable tools to help them to manage when there are multiple children in the home.
Some helpful tools include having some special one-on-one time with each child as well as a regular routine. Other red flags involve unsafe sleeping conditions and the potential danger of any body of water to infants, two of the leading causes of death for kids. There's also the big three, as Peck calls them, which are mental health, substance abuse, and domestic violence.
Do you think a 9-month-old or a 9-year-old is more affected by domestic violence? A 9-month-old is more affected than a 9-year-old. A lot of people don't think that because they think the baby doesn't know, but they do. And it's more scary for them because they don't have the brain development to figure out what's really going on. They just know something very scary and bad is happening, and that affects them for the rest of their life. And so we need to educate so parents can make informed decisions about what they're exposing their baby to.
And Peck says key instructions for better parenting include being more nurturing, exercising positive discipline, and having clear communication with your child. Social connections are key as well.
So isolation plus role restriction equals a higher abuse potential. So where parents are feeling isolated and where they feel like the child is restricting their freedom, those children are at much higher risk for being abused and neglected.
Both Peck and Sheets gave recent talks to agency officials and other groups as part of the Florida Faith Symposium in Orlando, hosted by the Florida Department of Children and Families and the Florida Department of Juvenile Justice. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kordner.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Kordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida public radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And please join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: The Able Trust, 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.